morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Wednesday, August 21st, 2024. Some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, say they are ready to vote for change across the country.
If it is a transparent election, I'm going for it. It's supposed to happen to end this suffering, to end this whole mess that's taking place in South Sudan.
And the chairperson of the South Sudan's Electoral Commission says his office has all it takes to conduct elections.
What we will know now is the budget to be passed by the Assembly. And then from there, we will get from the sources and purchase electoral material.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of the South Sudan's capital, Juba, say they are not sure if the country is ready for elections, but they are ready to vote for change in the country. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi spoke to some of them and has this report from Juba.
Many residents of Juba say they are ready to vote for change if elections are held in December. Nyarso Patrick, who is a member of the United South Sudan Party, says his party is ready for elections.
It is not clear from the Election Commission some of the tasks that their institution are facing, the challenges, and what are their progress as an institution that is responsible for election, and how can they even be assisted. Our party is ready for the election. We are just looking forward for clarification from the Election Commission on what is it that they have not done and what is it that they are planning to do.
Min Gabriel Chol, a member of President Salva Kiir's SPLM, says elections will end the suffering of South Sudanese.
We need elections because our people are really suffering in the country and even in the diaspora, in the refugee camp. And one day, election will bring instability. It will bring instability for the people. Our people should come back home and then they settle for their lives and then we move on. We need a democracy, not in the books. We need a democracy, a real democracy, the practical democracy, not just a theory democracy. Where people are just talking.
Gabriel Kwot Akok, the chairperson for People's Progressive Party, says the government should prepare the ground for the elections.
They are not actually serious about it. If they were serious, they would have implemented the provision of the agreement fully. Now, they are just trying to buy attention of the public that there is election. But in actual sense, it is all about wasting time. But at the end of the day, there will be no election. Otherwise, citizens are optimistic to witness the first ever election in South Sudan.
Nyarsuk adds that some provisions in the agreement are important to be considered to have all South Sudanese aboard.
There's a very important institution that is supposed to be functional by now, the Healing and Reconciliation Commission. It is a very important institution that helps South Sudanese to reconcile among themselves. It is supposed to be tackling things to do with reintegration of refugees and resettlement of refugees so that they will look into how do we bring the South Sudanese who are in the IDPs at the moment, who are in the refugees camp, to come back home, and they should be integrated into the refugees.
Another person who did not want to be named for fear of government reprisal says preparations for free, fair, transparent and credible elections can be challenging in a country like South Sudan.
If it is a transparent election, I'm going for it. It's supposed to happen to end this suffering, to end this whole mess that's taking place in South Sudan. But if it is just an election, I don't see anything is going to change because it will be the same faces, the same mess, the same catastrophic situation that we are going through.
South Sudan is expected to hold a presidential election in December 2024. However, some foreign diplomats, South Sudanese political activists and parties have expressed concern that the timeline for election preparations is not realistic. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's Electoral Commission says it is ready to oversee the conduct of the country's upcoming election scheduled for December 2024. Abednego Akok, chairperson of the South Sudan Electoral Commission, says his office is waiting for funds meant for supporting various electoral activities across the country.
We have completed the government in the states and in the headquarters, and we are training the card at the moment. What we have made now is the budget to be passed by the Assembly, and then from there, we will get from the sources and purchase electoral material, and we endeavor immediately.
Talk to me about the steps that are necessary for the conduct of this elections. In every election, registration is the first step. Are people registering right now?
No, they're not starting yet. I just told 2 minutes ago that the budget is not coming for approval by the parliament. As soon as it's approved, we will embark on voter registration.
A lot of people in the country don't have nationality ID, or what you call jinsia. Some don't have passport. What kind of identification documents is going to be used to verify voters in case registration kicks off?
We are going to use manual registration. In the rural areas, they will be identified by the chips or monitors. In the town, they will be easily identified.
How is that going to affect the voting process? What if I'm identifying my relative wrongly and identify them 10 times?
No, you can't. There are certain procedures to be applied. When you come to the voting center, your finger will be marked. It will tell you something to vote away. So you must come back to the voting station.
Every field of study has got some discipline. And the electoral process has got some discipline. You are dealing with a situation where majority of people in South Sudan don't have identification papers. And you're saying that you are going to use manual registration, fingerprints, and you're going to use chips to identify people. But that process is open to abuse. What do you think?
Well, it is the simplest and the best of all as far as South Sudanese are concerned. 80% of them are uneducated. So you can't even apply these modern technology on them. Yes, it may work only a time, but outside it cannot work.
And let's talk about the timeline. You are left with 3 months for the process to kickstart.
Well, you see, the election night says, whenever you remain 3 months, the election date must be declared, which we have done by December 22nd, 2024. And then the revitalized peace agreement, which was signed in 2018, says when you remain 60 days before the end transitional period, election must be conducted. Hence, from that time, we will conduct election.
And now, August is almost ending. We are left with September, October, November, and December. That's 4 months. Looking at a country like South Sudan with logistical challenges, is it possible to conduct elections in 4 months?
It is possible when we are serious and when we have resources at hand. You do that very easily.
But now you are telling me that you're waiting for the budget to be passed by the parliament. How long does it take for that budget to be passed?
I think we're not taking a number of days. We will naturally pass it.
You sound more positive than the political parties that are going to take part in the process. It's on record that the SPLM-IO is dismissing all the plans that are being made for the preparations for these elections. They have even not registered their party. What is the motivation behind your optimism?
You see, when the peace agreement was signed in 2018, it was said that the election will take place 2022. And those who signed peace, they were seeing the time was passing, and they were watching it. And then when they reached the time of amendment of the election act, they were seeing it also. They participated in it, and they passed the election calendar. Now, you being an incredible person, there are people who have been in the court for the last 20 years. They want to come to power. How will they come? They will come on with the election. And you know, in other countries, election can be done. Even the you register the same day, you go vote. You go to the independent result. So what is needed now is the concern of the political parties that we need to change. We need the rules to apply. We will go now for 20 years.
For the ordinary South Sudanese who are still doubting that given the timeline, given the challenges, given the remoteness of the country, it's not possible to carry any elections in South Sudan, what would you tell such people?
You know, this is not the first time for South Sudan to win the election. Since 1965 until the independence of the South, they have been voting for several times, several years. So the challenges before us can overcome if they are serious to vote.
But the people who are supposed to vote don't have much to offer this time except waiting for you to show them the way.
Well, you see, there are two issues now. The way I think is different from the way the political parties for peace and disagreement are thinking. But we are being governed by two documents, the Nation Commission Act, saying when you remain 6 months before
That's Abednego Akok, chairperson of the South Sudan Electoral Commission. He spoke to me from Juba earlier today. We apologize for the poor quality of that line from South Sudan's capital, Juba. Still on election matters, the National Democratic Institute is a non-profit, non-partisan organization that works to support democracy across the world. African officials are in Chicago this week to observe the Democratic National Convention. VOA's Carol Van Damme has more from Chicago.
Chris Famunya, Senior Associate for Africa and Special Advisor to the President of the National Democratic Institute, or NDI, says the U.S. Democratic National Convention is a unique chance for African officials to see up close how major political parties choose their presidential nominees and fine-tune their platforms, with delegates weighing in on the issues all the way until a platform is officially adopted at the convention, like it was here Monday night.
I've invited close to 200 internationals who are party leaders in their respective countries from Africa, Asia, Europe, Eurasia, Latin America, to use this opportunity to see firsthand and experience the electoral process in the United States. What party conventions mean, how candidates are nominated, how they are voted upon.
Famunya says while there have been gains in the past two or three decades, African officials realize there's been a democratic decline over the past few years, and that it remains to be seen if lessons learned by African leaders attending this convention will rub off on other leaders where democracy is under threat.
Such as Sudan, which at one moment looked like they were on a transition towards a positive path, have now fallen back into civil war. Or countries such as Mali and Niger and Burkina Faso, which at one point looked like they were emerging democracies, are now being governed by military juntas. So there is definitely a decline, which is probably not only African, but we see also in other parts of the world that democracy is coming under attack.
Nigerian former Senate President Ken Nnamani, who was invited here by the NDI, says he and other officials say being in Chicago to see Democrats choose their presidential nominee and work on their party platform is an invaluable experience.
Unless you have watched it, you have seen it, you may be reading about it, but it's not the same as going to see the warmth, the excitement, and the general atmosphere.
Nnamani and the other African officials got a taste of that Monday night when they watched President Joe Biden step on stage to say that he has loved his job for the past 4 years, but loves his country more. In an historic move, the 81-year-old president stepped aside last month to allow his vice president, Kamala Harris, become the Democratic Party's presidential nominee. Nnamani says Africans can learn a great deal from the American system of democracy, especially when a page of history being made is rewritten by the people.
There's a lot that we are learning from, or we copied from the United States. So when you are doing anything that you are doing, it influences other countries. Almost all African countries are non-democratic, almost all. There may be some vestiges of those that are planting themselves permanently, like Cameroon. We have been expecting that there should be a new blood that can invigorate people and get the country going.
Both Nnamani and Famunya say observing the U.S. Republican and Democratic conventions this year can only help African leaders in their quest to support and strengthen democracy at home. Carol Van Damme at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
Still in Chicago, former President Barack Obama addressed Democrats in his home city of Chicago Tuesday, saying Vice President Kamala Harris is the right choice to take on Donald Trump in the U.S. presidential elections this November. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from the second night of the Democratic National Convention.
A hometown welcome at the Democratic National Convention for former President Barack Obama.
America's ready for a new chapter. America's ready for a better story. We are ready for a President Kamala Harris.
Obama drew a direct comparison between Harris and her Republican opponent, former President Donald Trump.
Kamala Harris won't be focused on her problems. She'll be focused on yours. As president, she won't just cater to her own supporters and punish those who refuse to kiss the ring or bend the knee. She'll work on behalf of every American. That's who Kamala is.
Obama was introduced by his wife, Michelle, who said Harris's shortened campaign season should encourage Democrats to work even harder to elect her.
We cannot indulge our anxieties about whether this country will elect someone like Kamala instead of doing everything we can to get someone like Kamala elected.
Although Democrats already formalized their nomination process earlier this month, a ceremonial roll call of states.
Great state of Alabama proudly cast 56 votes for the first Black woman president of the United States of America.
Showed the enthusiasm of Democrats for their new nominee.
All 34 of our votes for our next Black woman and first South Asian president.
Harris thanked delegates remotely from her rally in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So to everyone in Chicago and across America, thank you. Thank you.
Democrats also heard from Harris's husband, who called his wife a joyful warrior. Doug Emhoff is the second gentleman.
She'll lead from the belief that wherever we come from, whatever we look like, we're strongest when we fight for what we believe in, not just against what we fear.
The second night of the convention also featured former members of the Trump administration and Republican officials who have endorsed Harris. John Giles is the Republican mayor of Mesa, Arizona.
Trump made a lot of lofty promises. Unlimited economic growth, American manufacturing reborn, a secure border. Turns out Donald Trump was all talk.
On Wednesday, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz will address delegates here in Chicago, formally accepting the party's nomination as vice president. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, foreigners are facing tough situation in South Africa. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and our words of wisdom for today comes from Central Equatoria State.
My name is Wani Bernard Walian Murie from Gaderuboma of Nyifo Fayam, Kajukeji County, South Sudan. I am providing my riddle in Kuku language, which read Ko Nyesuta Erik Boso Somot, which is translated in English that do not eat yourselves like fish, meaning do not do something bad for your fellow people. And thank you very much.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Foreign residents are fleeing several townships in Johannesburg, South Africa's largest city, as community organizations forced them to close their businesses. The latest xenophobic violence was sparked by the shooting of a young man in Soweto this month by allegedly a man from Pakistan. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Over the past 15 years, many migrants from South Asia, including Bangladeshis, Indians and Pakistanis, have established stores in South African townships. In some areas, these migrants now dominate small-scale trade, to the frustration of organizations that accuse the foreigners of stealing jobs from locals and sometimes of racism. The South Asian business people run what are known locally as spaza shops, selling a variety of low-cost goods, including bread, cool drinks and tinned food. Zandile Dabula leads Operation Dudula, one of the organizations pushing foreigners to close their shops in Soweto and other townships. She says local police are protecting violent foreigners, as she puts it, instead of their own people.
People do not longer feel safe around our law enforcement agencies. And we, as Operation Dugula, still feel that they are not doing enough for the communities. We shouldn't even be having guns in those casa shops. If police were doing their job, then a lot of incidents would have been avoided. We are harboring illegal immigrants. They do not like us, they do not love us, and they can go to such an extent of shooting at us. These people need to go out of our township, and township economy belongs to South Africans.
Yet many communities welcome the foreign spaza shop owners, saying the migrants provide a valuable service. South Africa's Department of Home Affairs also says most of the South Asians have legal documents to run businesses and have valid work permits. Recently, several groups attacked and looted stores managed by documented migrants, ordering them to leave townships. Dabula denies her organization was responsible for the violence.
We avoid chaos. We always make sure that when you do operations, it's always in order. There is no looting. There is no violence. We are not taking law into our own hands. Community have always asked us to come and assist. Their trust is on Operation Dudula. We have been entrusted with fighting the illegality, especially on the immigration side.
Operation Dudula members have in the past been arrested for various crimes, including damage to private property. Police are again warning them not to resort to vigilantism. Some groups say they'll allow migrants to reopen their businesses, but only if they agree to give a third of their profits to locals. Dabula denies Operation Dudula is part of such extortion. Stephen Gordon of South Africa's Human Science Research Council says most of the country's estimated 4 million foreign migrants contribute positively to society.
If immigrants come to South Africa and engage in economic activity, they add to the economy. This generates jobs for ordinary people, both in terms of foreigners employing South Africans, but also in terms of downstream effects. Foreigners buying things within the country creates larger amounts of economic activity, which leads to economic growth, which leads to more jobs, and also a healthier fiscus as people engage in various forms of tax payments, including, of course, VAT.
On Monday, security forces maintained a heavy presence in several Johannesburg townships as concern grows about the anti-foreigner violence spreading across South Africa. The country has experienced waves of anti-foreigner violence over the past several years. As unemployment stays above 30% and the government struggles to provide water, electricity and other services to many communities. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move to Nigeria, where, according to authorities there, Drug Enforcement Agency statistics, more than 14 million people in the country misuse drugs. Most of them are children or teens. Al-Hassan Bala reports from Kano, Nigeria.
The new road in the Sabangari area of the northern Nigeria city of Kano is a place where adults and many teenagers come to smoke drugs like cannabis or half-inhalants, also known as gum or sholisho. 13-year-old Ibrahim Idris uses cannabis and an inhalant called solution. He went into a rehabilitation center 6 months ago, but is now back to using. Ibrahim says he is enjoying it here, and in fact, everyone here loves it. No one here can leave this place. Even if you try to take us back to our parents, we will have to return because we love it. But 11-year-old Kumatu just wants to return to his family. Kumatu says he wants someone to take him back to his parents. He is sure even his mom has forgotten about him or thinks he is dead by now. He says he is a cannabis smoker. According to Nigeria's National Drug Law Enforcement Agency, over 40 million Nigerians engage in the misuse of drugs, mostly cannabis. A lack of drug rehabilitation centers in Nigeria inspired Kano-based anti-drug activist Abubakar Shaibu Metumaki to build a private center mainly for underage addicts. A former user himself, Metumaki explains why some young Nigerians turn to drugs.
The major reason addicts in Nigeria return to drug abuse are two. The first one is lack of parental guide and training. The second reason is poverty in many homes.
Muhammad Awal Imrana's two sons, aged 16 and 18, are drug users. He says parents should not abandon their children to drugs, but keep trying to help them. He says his sons are addicted to drugs. He has been keeping them close to him, and that has helped. One has stopped and the other has reduced his drug use. Nigeria's National Drug Law Enforcement Agency says that over the past 3 years, it has seized 7.6 million kilograms of illicit drugs such as cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and cannabis. And it has had success in court against those who sell them.
You also look at the number of prosecution, that is convictions, though the agency had also prosecuted and successfully gotten convicted within the same bracket, over 9,000.
According to a 2021 United Nations report, Nigeria will have 20 million drug users by the year 2030. But Ibrahim Idris and some of the people he uses with have other plans. They say they hope to get helped and return to a clean life. Al-Hassan Bala, VOA News, Kano,
and
Nigeria.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, August 21st, 2024. We now leave you with the song Fis Sabab by Ras Kolbi.
Fis Sabab, the kulu haji al-behasil fi dunya.
Sorry, that track by Ras Kolbi is not playing out, but we will go to this song, Sambala Sambala. Been listening to Genesis the Veteran and the song Sambala Sambala. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all updates on our programs. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Adrius Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.